a lot of retirement people now are shifting towards some sort of secondary career. It could be something that they, consulting in a business that they were part of or an industry they were part of. It could be as simple as Uber. Remember, we're just living a lot longer now too. So retirement lasts a lot longer than it ever has for generations in the past. And I think people are more active, healthier, and are more capable of having, a secondary career.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Well, if you're a boomer or an Xer, you're thinking about retirement, what it's going to be like. Will you ever be able to do it? Well, this is not your father or your grandfather's retirement. You need to go to this website. You need to buy this book, thefifthoption.com, Retirement Solutions for a Modern Economy. And I think you're going to really enjoy hearing from Walter Young, my next guest. The book is Fifth Option, Your Retirement, and Why Your Retirement Plan Won't Work the Way You Think It Will. Walter, great to have you on the show. And why? Oh, first, if you got a question for Walter and myself, I urge you to send me an email. I read them all. I'm caught up on everything now because I scaled back asking you for emails. Send me your email, kl@carrielutz.com. Walter, pleasure, honor to have you on the show. So retirement ain't what it used to be. So you're not going to get a gold watch from your employer because you worked there 25 or 30 years and a retirement bash. Although I'll tell you, my friend retired as a pilot from United Airlines. I don't think they gave him a gold watch, but they did shoot his plane with water cannons at Newark Airport on his last flight.
There are a few bastions where perhaps you can celebrate a long career like that.
Yeah. So what's different now? How did it happen? What do you do about it?
Yeah, great question. So you kind of hit the nail on the head, which is really we're moving from what once was a pension society into a pensionless society. Maybe a few of the boomers still work for cities or states or something like that where there are some pensions. But by and large, what's happening now is that we are probably more responsible than ever for our own retirement outcomes. And I could also argue that we may be the least prepared for that in terms of education and understanding of how retirement really works. And so I decided to write a book that really helps take some of the latest research from the academic world and turn it into a story form so that it's a little more accessible to all of us so we don't just get lost in the charts and graphs. And the idea behind the fifth option is that we are now moving into a time frame where we have to deal with two unknown questions. And I deal with this in the form of a story, which is simply this. Imagine you are on a desert island and you recognize that there's no way off this island, and in front of you is a barrel of water. Mm-hmm. And that water represents all the water you have to drink on the island. Carrie, how much water would you drink each day?
Well, I wouldn't be overdoing it because I don't want to get rid of my supply. So the minimum required to keep me hydrated and in good health, right?
That's exactly right. So when I ask this question, as I speak around the country and in lots of groups, I ask that question, but there'd be two other pieces of information that would be helpful. One is, how long am I going to stay on this island for? Mm-hmm. Well, I can't know that necessarily. Second, will it ever rain? Will it ever replenish my bucket? I can't necessarily know that answer either. And so if I don't know the answers to those two questions, then what you said is absolutely correct. I must take the least amount of water out each day just to stay alive, hoping for some sort of a rescue. But now let's change the scene a little bit. Let's pretend instead of being on a desert island that we're actually in your office on the last day of work, and your office provides you a big barrel of money. And that is the money that you have that's going to last for the rest of your lifetime. So, Carrie, I ask you again, if you're driving home with your barrel of money, how much money can you spend each day?
How much money can you spend each day? Well, again, you want to conserve it because you don't know how long it's going to have to last. So the minimum amount that you require for your needs, plus whatever pleasures you want to engage in.
So you can see that, interestingly, it's the same kind of question, right? So we want to ask, now we want to know two more pieces of information to be able to dial this in, which is one, how long am I going to live? You can't know that. And two, what rate of returns will the market provide you? You can't know that either. And so when we are unable to answer those two questions, the default in financial planning is to take out the least possible so that it can last a 30 or 35 year period of time. And in fact, a study was done in the 1990s that asked that simple question, which is, what is the maximum withdrawal rate I can take out of a portfolio so that it lasts 30 years? And the answer to that question back in the 90s was 4%. So a lot of your listeners may have heard of the 4% rule or the safe withdrawal rate rule, and that was its origin. Today, you might have some arguments. Some folks, like Dr. Wade Faug from the American College of Financial Services, would argue that it's closer to 2.8%. Others, like Vanguard, might tell you that it's 3.5%. But the whole point of the conversation is that it's a much smaller number than you're expecting. So what does that mean in reality? It means that if I actually can save $1 million, then I should be budgeting somewhere between $30,000 and $40,000 of income to live on. Mm-hmm. And for most of us, that's just not enough money to live on.
Well,
but also $1 million is a lot of money to save.
Right. Plus your Social Security, you got to throw into that equation. You're going to get some, and you know, I think the maximum is $4,500 a month now.
In that neighborhood, depending on your work record. And so what people are starting to wake up and realize is that that the amount of money that you're going to save is not going to generate as much income as you had hoped. And so traditional financial planning will give us four options. I call them the four frustrating options. The first option will tell you this is what you have to save more. Well, saving more money always solves a financial problem, but it's not easy to do. And the other thing, Carrie, that's interesting is that when I have to save more, I'm sacrificing today's lifestyle, hoping for a better tomorrow lifestyle. And so we have these two lifestyles that are kind of at war with each other, right? Every dollar that I save today is a dollar I don't get to have fun with today, but it also means that perhaps I can use that dollar later in retirement. The second option is take more risk, right? I could try to take more risk in the markets, hoping for a better return that would improve my pile of money at retirement. The third option is I can work longer, right? Like maybe I have to work to age 70, maybe I have to work to age 72, maybe I have to have a part-time job in retirement. And the fourth option is a capitulation, which is I will just have to live on less in retirement. And that is the one that's the most heartbreaking, because that's when you see people's eyes full of expectation of all the things they want to do in retirement, realize that maybe they don't get to go on some of these trips. Maybe they don't get to go visit the grandchildren. Maybe they don't get to go out to dinners as much as they thought. And they begin to tell me when I interview them of all the things they don't need to do now in retirement instead of all the things they want to do in retirement. But there's a fifth option, and that's what the book is about. There is a fifth option that helps us put together strategies that unlocks this minimalist thinking that will give us a much more robust income into the future. And it is based on the latest academic findings of some of the folks that study this. And it is a way to unlock better income with the same dollars. And it really takes advantage of some of the old philosophies like pensions and things that gave us retirements back when we actually could retire with confidence. And we bring them back into today's world in a modern economy.
Okay. Well, there's actually a sixth option. It's called the Smith & Wesson retirement plan, right?
Yeah. So we used to call that up here the Dr. Dvorkin plan. We fly down to Portland and he'll end it all for you there.
Yeah, which we don't advocate and I think is generally short-sighted, bad idea. But look, you want to retire, but you don't have to fully retire. If you have control of 80% of your time, whereas before retirement, you had control of 50% of your time or even less, then you're still retired, man. Maybe you're doing a gig. Like I met a guy the other day. He lived in the same town as me. He seemed to be fairly well off, but he was doing Uber in his spare time. I think, honestly, he probably wanted to get out of the house and away from his wife. It was probably part of the motivation. But he was making another, I would guesstimate, 20, 30, 40,000 a year on top of his Social Security and on top of his savings. So what's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, a lot of retirement people now are shifting towards some sort of secondary career. It could be something that they, consulting in a business that they were part of or an industry they were part of. It could be as simple as Uber. Remember, we're just living a lot longer now too. So retirement lasts a lot longer than it ever has for generations in the past. And I think people are more active, healthier, and are more capable of having, a secondary career. The point of the fifth option is simply to introduce efficiencies of retirement income planning so that you don't need to use as many dollars to create the same income. I think one of the areas that people are becoming educated in, and I use this quick analogy, is that there's personal finance and there's corporate finance. And they both share the same word finance, but they manifest themselves in a completely different way. Corporate finance is all revolving around cash flow, income, earnings. But unfortunately, in the personal financial world, we talk about balance sheets, how much, right? And unfortunately, you cannot take your 401k statement or a brokerage account statement to any Safeway. Even though it might have $1 million account balance, you can't buy milk with it until you turn it into some sort of cash flow. And we have to understand the efficiencies and the strategies of how to do that well, so that when you are an Uber or you are doing a second career, it's more because you have a passion or an interest or a curiosity, as opposed to having a mandate that you can't make ends meet.
Okay. So obviously you've given this a lot of thought. People own real estate, rental income, passive income. Is it worth getting into that in your 60s, 70s to do that or what?
Yeah, I don't know if the question is it worth it as much as what's your preference, right? When people have real estate, what they're really trying to do is create their own pension to some degree, right? They want predictable income that's coming through, passive income that's coming through, right? If I can't replace my active income with passive income, I never retire, right? And so we have to figure out how it is that I can create this income that's going to replace the income that I used to work for. Real estate's a very powerful way of doing that. We know lots of people with lots of wealth have done that. It's just a question of whether you want to be a landlord or have the capacity to have someone help manage a portfolio of properties. So it really comes to what I call the PETA factor. It's more of a pain in the ass factor
than
it is whether or not it's a good investment, right? So everybody has their own preferences, what they're comfortable with, and real estate certainly can be a good one.
Right. I always say there's two types of retirements. The retirement that you have to take, health, career ends, you're obsolete, whatever, and the retirement that you want to take, the voluntary retirement, where, hey, you could work a little bit. Myself, hey, I'm getting to that age, but I'm not a golfer, and most of my entertainment is nocturnal in nature, not to put a kind of a devious cast to it, but, I have fun at night. So during the day, I guess I could be taking courses, which I do, and other things, but I'm just as happy doing something that kicks off a little bit of cash flow, keeps my gray matter active, and keeps me relevant, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's right. And part of that is just that we have a much more vivacious aging group maybe than past generations, where there is curiosity. We do have the physical capacity, and we have the longevity to be able to have interests that go beyond a normal working career. And I think also, we don't have a normal working career anymore, right? There isn't such a thing as the 30-year gold watch mortgage burning party. Most of people today, especially the youth, really are more free agents. It's almost like we all are free agents for companies for periods of time. And at some point, either the company or ourselves decide that 10 years is over and we move on. And so that kind of pattern could certainly well persist into our retirement ages, where we have small stints of jobs, maybe a break in between them, and then we pick it up again as we have interest.
Hey, so I'll just give you an example, because this is from my son, but it's something that many of you out there could probably do. He was working in a ski shop, tuning up bindings and skis and stuff in high school. And he said, Dad, I really don't want to do that job anymore. And I said, hey, don't do it. You don't have to do it. I'm not forcing you to get a job. I think it's good that you have a job and then your own source of income for gas money or fun or whatever over and above what I give you. And he wound up writing content doing research on the internet. It was something called textbroker.com. And they had five levels of writing. He was a number four, fifth being the highest, probably, you know, postgraduate type. And the kid was making $100 a week, working maybe 5 hours, 10 hours a week doing it, 5 to 10 hours. And that was almost 20 years ago. And it really worked for him. So there's a lot of those opportunities out there, Walter, aren't there?
There's tons of opportunities. As daunting as it is for the youth, right? I talk to the people in the millennial Gen Z areas. And as daunting as it is for them to try to get their head around how does this finance going to work, there's also perhaps more opportunities than there ever has been. And the proverbial side hustle that once used to be something that meant that you weren't really making ends meet now really becomes a passion project for people of all ages, right? Where people have a secondary interest that they're either just using as a hobby, or maybe they're really trying to build it up into a career over time, and they're really using corporate jobs or just kind of traditional 9-to-5 jobs to pay the bills until it gets there. As much as there is around anxiety around how am I going to buy a home or how am I going to retire, I think there's endless amounts of options now that we can take advantage of that didn't exist, you know, even 10 years ago.
All right. So like what you're saying, opening your mind up, not being locked into the traditional retirement paradigm. Like my friend I told you about, a senior pilot, the most senior pilot at a major airline, you know, 65, mandatory retirement, he went, and now he's flying private. He doesn't make anywhere near what he used to, but he loves to fly, and he could easily support his family just on the earnings he's making as a private pilot. So life doesn't end at 65. I think that the definition, Walter, of work, the way we relate to it, has changed quite a bit, because it used to be, you know, you worked in a factory, you busted your hump for 20 years, whatever, to make money, and then that was it. There wasn't like a lot of personal development involved in careers, especially the more worker-oriented careers. But now our relationship to work is completely different. We realize that it satisfies certain needs in our psyche, like the idea of interacting with other people, of challenging yourself, of the self-esteem, so many other things. So as the definition of work has expanded, and as it's become more understood as to why we work, and it's not just for money, recognition, gratification, personal growth, there's so many factors involved in your career. So it makes the idea of retiring from a job you really hated to go to for 25 years every day, to now it's a mixed bag. You know, you might be very well working in a job that you hate, but you know that there could be other things out there that you like to do that are better.
Yeah, there's a wonderful Japanese philosophy called Ikigai that is becoming very popular. And Ikigai is kind of the mix of what I'm good at doing, what the world needs, what I can get paid to do, and what I'm passionate about. And when you operate in the center of that Ikigai Venn diagram, the Japanese will tell you, you never work a day in your life. And yeah. So for those folks, there is no such thing as retirement, because you are at the place of happiness when those pieces all come together. And like you mentioned, you know, some of us may make more money, but we may have less pleasure from the job. And so I think part of the pursuit, especially amongst our young, is really to find that centerpiece, that place where their passions come together, as they really are interested in making a difference in the world rather than just making a buck for an owner. And so we'll see a little bit of shift in philosophy, I think, in the next couple of generations, to really get into the place where, you know, they enjoy your work. It's something that is meaningful, and it's something that the world really needs. And you might have a very, very long career doing it that way.
All right. Well, hey, we appreciate you coming on. Just tell us again the name of the book and where we find it.
Yeah. So you can go to Amazon. It's called The Fifth Option by Walter Young. You can certainly buy it on any Amazon outlet. You could also visit my website, which is thefifthoption.com. And it's certainly been a pleasure speaking with you.
Hey, likewise. Appreciate it. Got a question? Walter, myself, again, email address kl@carrielutz.com. And you'll find a link to the book on our website, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. While you're there, make sure you sign up for your free newsletter. Walter, truly a pleasure. Good luck on the book, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.